The Memoirs of Charles James Yellowplush, sometime footman in many genteel families. Chapter 2, Captain Rook. I was now in the prime of early manhood, with a fine, tall, elegant figure and the shapely calves so valuable in a manservant and so much admired by the ladies.
Good morning, Becky.
Good morning, Mr. Charles.
If I may be allowed to say so, Becky, you are making a remarkably fine job of scrubbing those steps.
Oh, you're very kind, sir.
Not at all, Becky. Your labours deserve it. Seems a pity to have to tread upon such white steps. But needs must. A bientôt, as they say. See you later. Oh.
Goodbye, Mr. Charles.
My first master, Mr. Altamont, had turned out to be nothing more than a humble crossing sweeper. But in keeping with my burgeoning talent, fate had decided that my second master, Captain Rook, should be altogether a different kettle of poissons. He had, after all, a distinguished military history.
You know, the Duke of Wellington often asked for my advice on the finer points of military strategy. On the eve of Waterloo, he summoned me to his tent and he looked me in the face and said, Rook, take a look at the battle plan and tell me what you think.
What did he say?
And I took one look and said, Your Grace, don't put the Scots Greys on the left flank, put them on the right. And he took another look and said, Damn it, Rookie, you're right again. Changed the whole course of the battle, of course. That was still a close run thing. God bless the Iron Duke!
Captain Rook also moved in the highest society, as he liked to tell his assembled drinking companions.
Last night, I had the pleasure of dining with the Duke of Doncaster, and let me tell you, there isn't a finer gentleman in the whole of London. Why, he knocked back 10 bottles of champagne on his own account and then threw the bottles out of the window. And when some lowlife came in to complain they'd been hit on the head, he set his dogs on them. And believe me, they are the finest pack of hounds you'll ever see. God bless His Grace, the Duke of Doncaster!
Captain Rook was by far the most socially distingué master I had yet encountered. He was also a lying, cheating, despicable rogue, as you will soon discover. Captain Rook resided in Pump Court, Temple. You may not be acquainted with it. Suffice to say, it's in the confines of the city and the chosen abode of lawyers of this metropolis. It may perhaps appear curious that such a fashionable man should live in the Temple, but it must be recollected that many bachelors who have nothing to do with the law have here their lodgings, as well as many sham barristers who never put on a wig and gown twice in their lives. It takes all sorts of rogues to make up the world, and I'm not convinced that the unlegal gentlemen were more dishonest grasping rogues than the authentic article.
Good morning, Becky.
Good morning, Master Charles.
You're looking very pretty today, Becky. And your steps are, as always, immaculate. It's a pleasure to step on them.
Thank you, Master Charles.
Yes?
I'm glad you like stepping on them.
In the basement lived a caretaker who left almost all his duties and obligations to his domestic, the charming Miss Becky. On the ground floor were Screwson, Hewson and Jewson, attorneys. On the first floor, Mr. Sergeant Flabber. On the second floor was Mr. Haggerstony, an Irish barrister practising at the Old Bailey, and still not very good at it, pardon my linguistic jeu d'esprit. Opposite him was Mr. Richard Blewett, of whom more, much more, anon. And then on the third floor was my master, and opposite him, a new arrival, one Mr. Dawkins, of whom also, more anon. Whew. As I write these memoirs, I'm discovering the problems of which literary gentlemen complain, namely, that of exposition. But I still have one more character to introduce.
Morning, Charles.
Morning, James.
There is a general rule that male servants are known either as Charles or James. I am Charles James. My colleague, Mr. Blewett's manservant, was called James Charles. Although the captain regarded Mr. Blewett as a cut below him, and as a result our masters rarely spoke, we often conversed. Servants are more democratic that way.
So the captain's dining out this evening, Charles?
He is indeed, James. And Mr. Blewitt?
Also dining out.
Then perhaps you might join me for a pipe of tobacco and a pint of ale.
Oh, I'd be more than happy, Charles. Mr. Blewitt, by the way, is dining out with Mr. Dawkins.
Ah, the newly arrived gentleman who plays the flute.
Indeed. It's not a pretty sound.
All the same, I shall be interested to learn what you've discovered about Mr. Dawkins.
I've had the opportunity to talk to his manservant.
Oh, yeah. Is he a Charles or a James?
He's a James, Charles.
Till this evening, then, James.
I look forward to it, Charles.
Now, you may have wondered how my master, Captain Rook, made his living, not being a man of independent means. Also, inexplicably, the Duke of Wellington had failed to provide the captain with a pension for all the excellent military advice he'd given him. The fact is that the captain played cards. This was not a harmless pastime. It was his living. I believe the term is card sharp.
So, Charles, what have you discovered about the gentleman opposite who plays the flute so industriously and so appallingly?
That's Mr. Dawkins, sir.
And what do we know about Mr. Dawkins, Charles?
Well, according to his man James, he's just left the University of Oxford, and he has a pretty little fortune of his own in stocks.
A pretty little fortune being...
6,000 a year, sir. His late father was a cheesemonger who must have sold an awful lot of cheese.
So he's already inherited?
He's just come of age.
And where does Mr. Blewitt fit into this, Charles?
Well, he met Mr. Dawkins in some hostelry or other and told him about the lodgings to rent here, which Mr. Dawkins liked the sound of. Seems like Mr. Blewitt has now taken the young man's welfare very much to heart. Hardly seems to want to let him out of his sight.
So Mr. Blewitt is very attentive?
Oh, very attentive, sir.
Rather a common fellow, Blewitt, I've always thought. Always swearing and singing and slapping people on the back.
With due respect, sir, I don't believe he speaks highly of you.
But I know he's a racing man and a betting man, and he's a younger son with expensive, if vulgar, tastes. So I come to several conclusions, Charles.
Which are, sir?
In primis, any man who plays the flute is a simpleton.
Agreed, sir.
Secondly, Mr. Blewitt is a rascal.
Without doubt, sir.
Thirdly, when a rascal and a simpleton are always together, and when the simpleton is rich, one knows pretty well what will come of it. Which leads me to my fourth and final conclusion.
I think I can guess, sir.
I want a part of Mr. Dawkins. And if I have to be polite to Mr. Blewitt to achieve that, that is what I shall do.
If you are shocked by the foregoing edifying conversation, genteel reader, then I can only apologise. This is the world as I have experienced it, and the fact is that it's every man for himself.
Charles?
Hey.
This'll amuse you. Mr. Blewitt's wine merchant bills. 200 of yours.
Well, that's nothing, James. My master, being a more fashionable man, owes a great deal more money. Look.
Servants usually know as much about our masters as they do themselves. There wasn't a paper or a bill or a note or a memorandum in the captain's desk or drawer that I hadn't read. And Mr. Blewitt's James was the same. We had the keys to all the cupboards, and we had the best pickings out of the dinners.
Last night, it was fowls, livers, and the force meatballs out of the soup. They were so good.
You may call it robbery, but it's only our rights. The servants' perquisites is as sacred as the laws of England.
And the sweetmeats that came after were delicious. I gave some of them to Becky.
Becky? The girl who cleans the steps?
That's the one. You know her?
Well, a little. You?
A little.
But enough of preliminaries. It's time for my narrative to return like a mighty river to its principal course. For the captain was as good as his word. And what an expert he was when it came to cajoling and flattering for his own purposes.
Why, Mr. Blewitt, good morning. It's an age since we met.
Indeed, I was just...
What a shame that near neighbours should see each other so seldom.
Well, Captain, it has been a long time.
Now, Not, I think, since we dined at Sir George Hookey's, eh? What wine, what capital song.
Yes, but at the moment...
I particularly recollect your Mayday in the Morning. Damn me, the best comic song I ever heard.
You exaggerate, Captain.
No, I mean it. I was speaking to the Duke of Doncaster about it only yesterday.
The Duke of Doncaster?
Well, just so well, you know the Duke, I think.
No, I don't.
What? Not know him? Why, hang it, Blewitt, he knows you as every sporting man in England does, I should think. Why, man, your good things are in everybody's mouth at Newmarket.
I rather doubt it.
No, I must introduce you to the Duke.
Et cetera, et cetera. As writers don't often say, but should. Even Mr. Blewett couldn't resist so much flattery, and he ended up accepting an invitation to the captain's chambers for a cigar, even though the captain hated cigars and had laid them in special.
Capital cigars, Captain.
I'm glad you like them.
Very neighbourly of you.
Well, that's my thought exactly. We should all be neighbourly. I mean, this young gentleman who's moved in opposite, Dawkins, I believe is his name.
So I've heard.
Well, I gather he's a friend of yours. And so just as I'm glad to make your better acquaintance, I would also be glad to make the better acquaintance of any friend of yours.
I think you believe I know this Mr. Dawkins better than I do. He's a cheesemonger's son, so I've heard. So though I've exchanged visits with him, I don't intend to continue the acquaintance.
Ah. I'm surprised to hear it. I was under the impression...
Oh, no, no, I've no intention of associating with that kind of people. This really is an excellent cigar.
How dare he? How dare he tell such a barefaced lie? A vulgar rogue.
After Mr. Blewett's departure, my master was not in the best of tempers. Not least because smoking a cigar had made him go yellow in the face.
The cursed swindling boar! He thinks he'll ruin this poor cheesemonger on his own, does he? I'll soon put a stop to that.
I could barely stop myself laughing when he talked in this style. I knew very well what his putting a stop to it meant. Locking the stable door, but stealing the horse first.
I'll show him. I'll make the acquaintance of Mr. Dawkins, whether he likes it or not.
The next day, his strategy for becoming acquainted with Mr. Dawkins was executed, and very pretty it was. Now, apart from poetry and the flute, Mr. Dawkins was very fond of good eating and drinking, and would sally out of evenings dining sumptuously and drinking all sorts of wine with his new friend, Mr. Blewett.
I'm sure I've got my keys here somewhere. Here we are.
Well, anybody who eats and drinks too much overnight wants a bottle of soda water and a grill, perhaps, in the morning. And so, regular at 12 o'clock, the waiter from Dick's Coffee House was to be seen on our staircase, bringing up Mr. D's hot breakfast. So what does the captain do the next day? Just as the waiter with the breakfast is coming up, Captain Rook is going down, humming an opera tune and twisting round his head his heavy gold-headed cane. By a most unlucky accident, he struck his cane against the waiter's tray, and away went Mr. Dawkins' grill. Cayenne, ketchup, soda water and all.
You clumsy elf, look where you're going.
I'm sorry, sir, but...
Are you implying this is my fault?
No.
That is Mr. Dawkins' breakfast, is it not, lying there on the stairs?
Yes, it is, sir.
Clear up and get out. I think you've caused enough damage for one morning.
Here you are, sir.
Excellent.
For now comes the cunning part. He sends me out to Mr. Morell's in Piccadilly for what's called a Strasbourg pie, or pâté de foie gras, as the French call it. Then he takes a card and nails it onto the outside case, and he writes on it...
To Captain Rook, with the Duke of Wellington's compliments.
And then, as if I didn't know his game, he says...
You know, Charles, I'm desolate that that unlucky accident caused Mr. Dawkins to lose his breakfast. A thought strikes me. Why don't I send him this pie by way of apology?
Oh, I'd say that was a very happy inspiration, sir. How lucky I'd gone out and bought this here pie so recent.
That's enough from you, Charles. I'll write the note straight away, and then you'll take the pie and the note to Mr. Dawkins.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and Charles?
Yes, sir?
Listen, you scoundrel. If you say where you got the pie from, I'll break every bone in your body.
Beg pardon, sir. I thought it was a present from the Duke of Wellington.
Precisely. But no need to mention the fact. Mr. Dawkins can read the label for himself. Now, the note.
Now, promises regarding violence to my body if I disobeyed were among the very few promises I ever knew him to keep. But I still took down a copy of his note, which was very elegant, in order that I might demonstrate to Becky how the beau monde expressed itself.
Are you ready, Becky?
I am, Master Charles.
I can see. The steps is spotless as ever. So, here we go. Now, despite my master's faults, this is elegance, Becky. This is style.
I don't doubt it, Master Charles. But you see,
Becky,
I've already...
This will be edifying to you. Captain Rook presents his compliments to Mr. Dawkins and begs at the same time to offer his most sincere apologies and regrets for the accident which has just taken place. If Mr. Dawkins will do him the favour to partake of the contents of the accompanying case, perhaps he will find it is not a bad substitute for the plat which the captain's awkwardness destroyed. And now, the peroration, as they say. It will be no small gratification to the original donor when he learns it has fallen into the hands of so celebrated a bon vivant as Mr. Dawkins. Eh? Oh, you don't seem that impressed, Becky.
No, Master Charles. It is very fine. It's just that I've heard it before.
Oh?
Master James read it to me.
Would that be Mr. Blewett's James?
No, Mr. Dawkins' James. He also read me Mr. Dawkins' reply. Something about the captain's magnificent politeness.
Huh. Becky?
Yes, Master Charles?
Oh, do you have many admirers?
It depends what you mean by an admirer. Huh.
This pie is delicious.
I'm glad you like it, Mr. Dawkins.
I would expect no less from a man of the Duke's taste.
Of course, Captain Rook was only too happy to accept an invitation to join Mr. Dawkins and help him eat the pie. He had, of course, other matters too on his bill of fare.
This is exquisite wine.
I'm so glad you like it, Captain Rook.
Indeed, your whole apartment speaks of a cultured eye and refined taste.
You really think so? You're not just saying that?
Not at all. And when it comes to your flute playing, well, words simply fail me.
It doesn't annoy you?
It is an experience like no other.
You're very kind.
Might I inquire, do you like to play cards?
Yes, I do. Ah. In a modest way, of course. Mr. Blewett and I sometimes play. He's teaching me the finer points of card handling.
I'm sure he is. Perhaps I can join you one evening.
That would be delightful.
Dawkins, my old buck, how are you? What the devil? What's going on?
I don't know if you've met Captain Rook. He plays cards too.
Oh, Mr. Blewett and I know each other pretty well. Pray, sit down. We're sharing a most delicious pie.
So Blewett sat, and it was a question of who should sit the other out. But Mr. Blewett was no match for my master. He was fidgety and sulky, while the captain remained charming. Finally, Mr. Blewett could stand it no longer.
If you'll excuse me, Dawkins, my duty's call.
Oh, so soon?
Another time. Your servant, Captain...
No, Mr. Blewett, I'll accompany you. I think we need to have a word. Mr. Dawkins, this has been delightful. Yes, I look forward indeed. To returning the compliment soon, with perhaps a pleasant game of cards.
I would like that very much. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Well, no sooner were they outside than the captain takes Mr. Blewett by the arm and leads him into his own chambers for a tete-a-tete, as they say in France.
Blewett, I think we need to come to an understanding. I intend to introduce Mr. Dawkins to the Duke of Doncaster.
A plague on your Duke of Doncaster! You think I don't know you? Every man knows you and your line of country. Yes, you're after young Dawkins there and think to pluck him, but you shan't know by you. Shan't you...
To spare the sensibilities of my audience, I have decided to omit several of the words used by Mr. Blewett upon this occasion.
If you attempt to hector with me, I will cane you. If you want more, I'll shoot you. If you attempt to meddle between me and Dawkins, I will do both.
I protest!
Protest away. I know what you're up to. So far, it's been softly, softly. You win a few pounds, he wins a few pounds. But you intend to rob this lad of everything he has.
Son of a... You can...
Now listen to this. If you keep quiet, I'm prepared to give you half of this fellow's money.
But I...
However, if from now on you venture to win a shilling from him in my absence or without my consent, you do so at your peril.
This is very hard, and I must say, not very fair. The game was of my starting, and you have no right to interfere with my friend.
Blewett, you're a fool. You professed but yesterday not to know this man, and I was obliged to find him out for myself. I should like to know by what law of honour I am bound to give him up to you. Either agree to go halves, or be prepared to take the consequences.
It was very charming to hear this pair talking about honour. I declare that I could have found it in my heart to warn young Dawkins of the precious way in which these chaps were going to serve him. But if they didn't know what honour was, I did. In all my career, never did I tell tales about my masters, when in their service, out, of course, the obligation is no longer binding. The next day, there was a grand dinner in Mr. Dawkins's chambers, food and drink supplied by my master, a man never generous without a purpose.
I don't think I've ever seen so much food.
Well, they'll be dirtying that step of yours.
Oh, I reckon it's worth it. We'll all dine royally on what's left over, or doesn't make its way upstairs.
Yeah.
There's grouse, I hear.
Oh, who told you that?
James, and soup, and turbot, and lobster, and a saddle of lamb. And then to drink, wines, champagne, hock, Madeira, a bottle of port, and ever so many of claret.
I didn't know you drank, Becky.
Oh, only in moderation, in company.
And what company would that be?
Oh, look, here come some more waiters.
Well, there were three gentlemen present as I waited upon them, and there are no prizes for guessing their names. After dinner, and perhaps eight bottles of wine between the three, the gentlemen sat down to écarté. It's a game where only two plays, and where, of course, if there's three, one looks on. First, they played crown points and a pound a bet. At this game, they were wonderful equal. So, when I served supper, more champagne, grilled ham and devil biscuits, the play stood thus.
Mr. Dawkins has won £2, mm-hmm. Mr. Blewett 30 shillings, mm-hmm. and I have lost £3, 10 shillings. Oh, mm. Dame Fortune is clearly not on my side.
The play was now a little higher. Mr. Blewett stood down, betting on Mr. Dawkins' play and giving him the most excellent advice. After this session, as it was late, Master was counting up the score on a card.
Oh, dear me, I have been unlucky. Blewett, I owe you, let me see. Yes, £5.40.
And no mistake.
Let me write you a cheque.
Oh, no, there's no hurry.
Nor was there, seeing that the captain's cheque was not worth the paper it was writ upon.
And now I've got to settle with you, my dear Mr. Dawkins. Voya, 50 points at a guinea. That's easy to calculate. Here are 50 gold guineas.
The captain was confident, you see, so he was even laying out ready money to prepare the way.
Captain Rook, you are a gentleman. It is a pleasure to be playing with you.
And you, let me say, and I've had some little experience, are the very best écarté player with whom I have ever sat down.
Lord Captain, I think you flatter me. I'm sure it's just a matter of a run of good luck.
Not at all. Mind you, Dawkins, I must have my revenge, for I'm ruined, positively ruined, by your luck.
Perhaps another time, eh, Dawkins? I think we've all had a great deal to drink.
Mind you, when one has a lucky streak...
So, do you think we should continue?
The choice is, of course, yours.
Well, generally in these cases, one of two things happens. Either the pigeon agrees to come back another night and get plucked, or he decides to stay put and gets plucked right away. Mr. Dawkins settled for the latter.
Well, gentlemen, let's see if my luck will hold. I'm fascinated to find out if it will.
After serving supper, I left Mr. Dawkins to his fate and fell asleep. I was awakened by my master returning.
Come in.
You all right, sir?
Never better. Here, take this.
The captain actually gave me some silver, so I knew things had gone well. Then he staggered, he danced, he hiccuped, he swore, and finally, he sunk down exhausted on his bed. I pulled his boots off and made him comfortable. When I removed his garments, I did what it's the duty of every good servant to do. I emptied his pockets. And I found there the following pretty document.
A cheque for £4,700. Signed Thomas Smith Dawkins, Friday 16th of January.
There was another bit of paper of the same kind, which read,
I owe you £400, Richard Blewett.
Which I knew meant nothing.
Is your master at home?
I'll just see, sir.
Ah, good morning, Blewett. I think we had quite a night of it, eh?
Indeed, you in particular. £4,700, I believe, which makes my share, let me see, £2,350, which I'll thank you to fork out.
But upon my word, what?
Mr. Blewitt, I don't understand what you mean.
You don't know what I mean? You don't know what I mean? Did you not promise me that we were to go shares? Didn't you swear on your honour as a gentleman to give me half of all that might be won in this affair?
Agreed, agreed.
Well, sir, and now what do you say?
Well, that I don't intend to keep my promise. You infernal fool and ninny. Do you suppose I was labouring for you? Do you fancy I was going to the expense of giving a dinner to that jackass yonder that you should profit by it? Get away, sir. Leave the room, sir. I might give you that £400, but only if you consent to forget all that has passed between us and that you have ever known Captain Rook.
Oh, you mother...
I've seen people angry on many occasions, but never any like Blewitt. He stormed, groaned, bellowed, swore. At last, he began blubbering.
Charles?
Oh, please!
Show the gentleman the door. And now it's time to go to the bank and collect my winnings.
Captain Rook?
Yes, that's me.
You presented this cheque against Mr. Dawkins' account.
Is there anything wrong with it?
No. The cheque is perfectly in order.
Ah.
It's just that Mr. Dawkins emptied his account when the bank opened this morning.
Well, he did what?
He emptied his account. Apparently, he's off on a long tour of the continent.
But he owes me money. He's cheated me.
That, I'm afraid, Captain, is a matter you'll have to raise with Mr. Dawkins.
Anything the matter, sir?
There's nothing there. He emptied the account this morning. Now they don't even know where he is. I've been cheated, robbed. And you know the worst of it, Charles. I actually gave him 50 gold guineas of my own money. And he had the nerve to pocket them. I'm ruined. Ruined.
Realising he'd been bested by a young pigeon, Captain Rook went into a sad decline. I needed to find a new master, and there was more. Mr. Dawkins James absconded with Becky, so that was the last I saw of her.
The Yellow Plush Papers by William Makepeace Thackeray was adapted for radio by Stephen Wyatt. Charles Yellow Plush was played by Adam Buxton. Rook was Stephen Critchlow, and Blewitt was Dan Starkey. Dawkins was Inar Mirza, Becky Donla Hughes, James and the waiter, Robert Lonsdale, and the clerk, Jonathan Taffler. The director was Abigail Le Fleming.